Fade to Black, the spoke radio for the masses. That's right. Today's Wednesday, November 4th. 309 days into the new year, just 56 days left. For KJCR and the Game Changer Network and KGRA The Planet, I am your oh-so-humble host, Jimmy Church. Tonight, it's clean and sober. Tonight, we have very special guest, Bob Fletcher. One of the seriously most requested guests here. Lynn Lewis has been shouting out for him forever. We'll be doing the B-Roo and Planet X tonight. Tomorrow night, Doug Taylor, back Fade to Black. I'm your oh-so-humble host, Jimmy Church. On the Game Changer Network, KGRA The Planet. Tonight, we have very special guest Bob Fletcher is with us. We'll be discussing the B-Roo and Planet X and other current events. We'll get to all of that. I want to remind everybody, tomorrow night, Doug Taylor will be with us, and it will be a full evening of Atlantis. Bob Fletcher owned a toy factory in Marietta, Georgia, near Lockheed Dobbins Air Force Base in 1985. In order to expand his business, he merged with a partner, Gary Best. Later, he found Best was a high-ranking covert intelligence agent who intended to use the toy company for arms dealing. Following his ousting from the toy company, Fletcher eventually wound up in Knoxon, Montana, with a small group of people who began the Militia of Montana. This affiliation put him on numerous TV talk shows and before a U.S. Senate investigation committee targeting U.S. militia activity in 1995. A comment by Fletcher about the scientific ability to control the weather created a storm of attempted debunking by authorities. Since then, he has turned his attention to the return of Planet X, Nibiru, and the latest evidence for the rogue Planet X, and how underground cities and hideouts have been developed for the elite to seek refuge. I would like to welcome, for the first time, to Fade to Black, Mr. Bob Fletcher. Bob, how are you tonight, sir?
I'm hanging in there, as they say, you know, looking at the world from an old man's point of view at this point in time. I anticipate that the United States is going to require, it's going to be obligated, what I'm talking about now are the bad guys that are running the country, are going to put us or want to put us into a martial law configuration before the Planet X or Nibiru or whichever incoming galactic problem it tends to turn out to be, before that is seen and recognized as, uh-oh, what's that thing up in the sky that's getting bigger every night, all right?
Right.
There will be a point in time when 100,000 or 25,000 amateur astronomers are going to see this thing, all right? When that happens, we have so many months before it comes really close, swings around, and causes an awful lot of unbelievable problems for the globe. So we have to be under a martial law configuration before that happens, all right? And that's global. Okay, now, where you have, you know, like Red China and Russia, it's easy for them to go into martial law because they're 80% martial law most of the time anyhow.
Right.
But for America, it's going to have to be some real serious problem that will permit the American people to believe that they want to, that they're glad that they're being put into martial law, okay? So what's that going to take? And I put this specifically, as a matter of fact, in the DVD that I put out on Nibiru about a year ago now. That is that it would have to either be an uncontrollable breakout of a biological problem, like Ebola or something of that sort, or any disease situation, or it would have to be very serious terrorist movement in the country, and by that I mean like three, four, five different cities having 9/11 type problems again, right, in several cities within 2 weeks or something like that, where everybody is completely running around and pulling their hair out, so we have to have martial law. Or the third that I put in the DVD a year ago is that it might possibly be an apparent movement to World War III, which would be either with Red China and Russia together or Russia or by themselves, because this Russia was just very, at that point in time a year ago, moving and doing crazy stuff and going into the Caspian Sea area and going into different areas and doing all these strong arm movements, you know, and assisting different parts of their neighborhood. And then, of course, now, most recently, all of a sudden, aha, the Russians announced that they're going to start just blowing up people in the desert and supporting supporting what's-his-name, Hussein there, that's the dictator in Syria. And that so all of a sudden, see, that's a direct one-on-one against us, right? It's, you know, we're trying to get him out of office. I don't understand why they haven't, if they were serious about that, why he hadn't just been blown up in his car. I'm not sure I'd follow that, so
right.
that's fishy.
yes.
No, I mean, that's fishy right away,
is.
You know.
It is.
The people that really run this country, and if anybody that's listening thinks that the people that you're, these different people you're voting for, including anybody coming up for the presidency, if you think they really run the country, well, then, you know, God bless you and may you have a happy life. But
well, you found that out the hard way.
Yeah, and it's such a reality, and when it first happened, it was overwhelming. But believe it or not, I'm working on a new report that I won't get into much at all tonight about until I accomplish it, you know, but that has blown me completely out. I mean, it has just blown my mind completely, this new situation that I'm investigating, you know, and I best thing I can say is pray for the globe, because there's things going on that are so beyond to a point where a normal person would could not believe it in a million years, things that I've discovered. And I had no intention of doing anything else after the last DVD that I did on Nibiru. And let me get into the Nibiru thing a little bit so that everything that I've done for the last 30 years has been chasing bad guys, corrupted people in government, and corrupted people running the government that are not in government but still have the control of everything. And this world government, new world order, and everything, that's totally real. The concept of putting us into a configuration to be part of a big world government run by a limited few that has control of everything and totally every part of your life. We have slowed them down a little bit, fortunately, and I will say, you know, the talk radio programs and the patriot movements around the world and around the United States have had a lot to do with slowing down their plan, but it's been planned for many years. And if you look at the Communist Manifesto, the 8 or 12 steps to taking a free nation and putting it into the communist concept, which is what the New World Order will be. It's being sold to everybody like this panacea of a wonderful situation with everybody's medical cares and problems will be taken care of, and there you don't have to worry about making decent income. Everybody will be having a big fair piece of the pie and all of that stuff, and education will be wonderful because it'll all be unified and everything will be free, and the medical care will be close to free and all the rest of that stuff. And all of these things, Obamacare, okay, and the banking mergers of all the big banks taking on the small ones and eating them up, everything corporately being brought in under giant banners, and small businesses all being taken in, under the banner of big companies. All of those things are the New World Order, one world government concept, but black that out and write in there the Communist Manifesto, and that's what they are.
Well, what about Nibiru, Planet X, when it comes to Russia and China, the institution of martial law, which you had talked about earlier? Are we in lockstep on that front as well?
So, and I want to preface this, and we talk about this now. The I want to preface this that originally, because of what I've done, you know, and at the level I've the inquiry that I've assisted was Senate and Congressional and Congress and et cetera, you know, I've been highly respected for what I've done, and I'm internationally known, et cetera, and all that good stuff. I never got into anything that would be quote-unquote hokey, you know, or strange or science fiction or anything of that. It's all been straight up and down serious inquiries. So the idea of this Planet X, it didn't come to me. It was not something I had an interest in. Not like I've studied it previously for a long time. I certainly did when I got into it, but and getting with people that have spent their entire lives chasing it or studying it and following it, if you will. But what happened a couple years ago, I had several people kept saying, you got to find out what's going on with, number one, tremendous amounts of money vanishing, just money in general, you know, cash out of vanishing out of the coffers of the legitimate programs out of Washington, but then also covert and black and even covert money being transferred into other more covert, deeply secret operations than they were originally put into. And, you know, and it got to be where it was gigantic amounts of money. Right. And on the day before, and people were asking me, you got to at least look into it. If you don't do anything else, look into this. You know, and then, like I said, I'm getting to be an old man, so it's getting old. But I said, okay, all right. So I started looking into it, and a great example was Donald Rumsfeld, who was in charge of the Defense Department for several years with the Bush and Reagan and all during that period of time. A few years back, the day before the 9/11, so it's 2001 or whatever, Rumsfeld's talking before the Congress on another investigation of sorts, and he said, as a matter of fact, I guess they were looking for money, he said, well, the Defense Department has been unable to track $2.3 trillion.
Gone.
And he said, we lost it. Okay. And it was over a period of a few years. It was not like a single year, but it was over a period of a couple of years. They lost $2.3 trillion, and I found out about that. I saw him I had the videotape of his testimony, and that was the day before the Twin Towers came down at 9/11 thing. All right, so obviously there was no follow up on his statement that they had lost $2.3 trillion. But then I found out also, obviously, that the gold is all gone out of Fort Knox. There is no gold at Fort Knox. It's gone. And the Senate and the Congress, on many different guys, have moved forward over the last 5 years, all right, 10 years, have gone in and said, hey, we need an audit. And, of course, they simply tell them to take a hike because there's nothing at all that says that the Federal Reserve, who runs that part of the program, they're not obligated to respond to the Senate or the Congress or the President, really. And they just told them, go away, we're not doing an audit. You know, it's none of your darn business. Okay? So at the same time, a couple years ago, We had the fellow that was in charge, flew over from France or Geneva, wherever he was, and a billionaire unto himself, and he was the head of the International Monetary Fund out of Europe. And he said the European nations under the IMF require an audit of the gold because we don't think our gold is still there. And they ran him out on a pole. They actually charged him with a false sex scandal thing out of New York, and they actually went on his plane. Matter of fact, what he did was he said, if I don't get an audit or a guarantee of an audit, I'm going to the United Nations as the International Monetary Fund, and we are going to force you to audit and prove the gold is there or show us where, what, and who. All right? That was what he did. He threatened them. So what happened the next day? He's getting on his own plane that's probably a $14 to $20 million airplane, flying back home, all right? They grabbed him, yanked him off of the plane in New York, arrested him for chasing his maid around the bedroom at the $2,000 a night hotel he was in. Now, it was, of course, that's bull, you know. But the bottom line is they said, listen, we're going to put you in jail here in New York and scandalize you if you don't shut up and just get out of here, get on your plane, and don't come back to America. So that's how they handled the head of the IMF, International Monetary Fund, when he asked for the gold audit. So this is a long story getting around to the bottom line that the money of gold out of Fort Knox has been disappearing. It's all gone. The money from every nook and cranny has been disappearing. Now, the question then was, what in the world, how could you spend all of this money, and why would you be spending this money? You can't, you know, stealing a few million a month, which a lot of the senators and congressmen get away with, and it's a lot of the, quite often, investigations that I was involved with, like with Henry Gonzalez, was trying to track down misappropriated funds and things of that sort. But the bottom line is you can't money launder $1 trillion.
No, you can't.
The biggest drug smuggler in the world, with all their power and strength and the ability to kill you if you didn't cooperate, they can't money launder $1 trillion. You know, it's just not. So the bottom line was, what I discovered was that they had been building in the United States 103 underground facilities, survival facilities, for the wealthy elite. Then I found out, to my surprise at that time, that they've been doing it all around the world, that the Russians built 5,000 small underground facilities in a period of about 3 years. They accomplished that around 2013, beginning of 2014. They had accomplished putting up as many as 5,000 of these hideouts. Now, some of theirs were very big. Those would be the ones that are going to be for the upper echelon. And then another bunch of them are for the second level of people in society, but the upper level, of course, would be going into the big fancy ones. One of them, which would accommodate something like 40,000 people for many years underground, really big. The ones in the United States include underground maglev trains, underground going between states from one location to another at almost, 400 miles an hour underground in these, vacuum tube tunnels. Then I found out, and the Chinese have been doing the same thing, underground facilities, big ones, a lot of them. I actually tracked the fact that for several years, a couple of years now, they've been contracting, the government's been contracting with like 90% of the American productions on survival foods, the dry foods and things of that sort, and they've been contracted and grabbed up almost all of that for the last 4 or 5 years. And they're supplying the underground facilities with a targeted date of 2014, 15, 16, all right? In other words, they're not building and creating them and supplying them in terms of for 2025.
Right.
They've been doing it for this month, you know, next month, that kind of a thing. So then, finally, I found out what it was, and that was the apparent disclosure or discovery in 1983, when Reagan was president, Bush was vice president, Bush number one, vice president, and they put they were working on the Star Wars initiative thing, where they were putting telescopes out all over the place and sensing devices around to theoretically keep track of Russian or Chinese missiles coming in and the ability to shoot them down. And they were working on weapons that would shoot down these missiles and things in a few seconds. It would have to be in a configuration where they actually could go from multiple targets, you know, boom, 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 that type of thing, in outer space and knock down the rockets coming in and everything. But in the middle of that, they had sent out, of course, their new infrared telescope way out past where it had ever, nothing like it had ever been sent out before. And the word was, uh-oh, there's this big infrared planet that everybody's been talking about. It is out there, and we tracked it for a while, and it looks like in 20 years or so that's going to be coming back in our backyard. And, of course, there's been, for eons, there's been people writing about this and talking about it. It's in the Bible described very well, and not only that, it's been a couple of the people who I've started to keep track and follow their work, had been doing and tracking this thing for years, and of course most people say, you know, what are you talking about? I can't see it. I don't even know, you know, it's out there so far. Don't worry about it, you know. But the idea was that it was on this extraordinarily huge orbital configuration, said pretty much to probably be on a 3,000-year orbital schedule, okay, and that it would come around approximately every 3,000 or 3,500 years, and that it was what caused Noah's floods. And then one or two of the groups that have done, like I say, the serious studies on this for so many years, one fellow actually went to China and lived there for a while and got into the old emperor's writings and the translations of that, and other manuscripts that go back either hundreds or thousands of years, and they describe this thing as being a huge planet that comes around, it's got four or five moons dragging around with it, and does come in this huge orbital thing, and when it comes by, it disrupts because of its size, and it's amazing how many proofs of documented scriptures, including, you know, the monks on the top of the Himalayas and the Chinese emperors and their old astronomers going back 1,000 years and all, that write and wrote about this thing. And it's all the same. The period of time is always, you know, it's a little hard to put a handle on that, but the period of time of its return is always kind of agreed upon. You know, and again, in terms of governmental situations, as I mentioned earlier, they cannot announce this to anybody. In other words, the Russians, the Chinese, they talk about the planet in Russia and China much more than they do here, but nobody's saying, you know, like 9 months down the road, this thing's going to be here, right? And obviously, to do that would cause really a world panic. To say that it would affect the economy is, you know, that would be the least of our problems. I mean, people would just go completely nuts if they thought something was going to come around and do this destruction. You know, and it would be multiple of problems. But the point is, for one thing, I was convinced that this is real. I had enough other background in the, and again, the politics and the creating these underground facilities and filling them with the foods for 2 years and preparation of things for these underground facilities and the movements, the changes, the alterations in programs and different things they started doing, it all supports, unfortunately, the fact that within the next year or two that the Nibiru is going to be passing close by again. Apparently, the previous dates, according to people, not myself, but according to the people that have been studying this for so long and all, the concept is that it will be visually seen in December in the sky like a new star, and then it will just get bigger progressively, and that December, January, February, March, and by March, it will be passing close to be causing the serious problems. By the way, my DVD, which covers all of this, everything, and pictures of the underground facilities, all of the scientific, everything involved with it, and all you could ever even, it's an entire library of information. It's 4 hours long. It's a double disc DVD. It's available at my website. If people want to get it, you can get a copy of it at BobFletcherInvestigations.com. It's BobFletcherInvestigations.com. Or you could just go on Google and put Bob Fletcher Nibiru, and you'll end up getting that getting directed one way or another. It's all over the world at this point in time.
Yeah, we've got all the links up at JimmyChurchRadio.com.
Great. And as a matter of fact, let me make this point, because I found out a lot of my older friends out there, some of them that are not don't like to get involved with the computer one way or another. If you drop me a note, it's a post office box 216, Bayview, Idaho, 83803. It's box 216, Bayview, Idaho, 83803, and it's $24.95. We pay the shipping on both discs, and it's really it's mind-boggling. It's a little tedious because it's long, but it covers every tiny aspect, including things like the religious side. You see, the Catholic Church a couple of years ago, because of all of this, put in the largest infrared land telescope that was available at that time a few years ago in Arizona, cooperatively with the United States, and it's owned by the Vatican. They're completely up to speed on this thing. They're completely aware of it and watching it.
I wanted to jump in really quick. What is the use of? I mean, obviously, underground facilities are great. You're protected, but what is the use of that? Is Nibiru just going to come so close to us that the gravitational pull is going to cause damage?
It's if and when this comes by. First off, it's going to be dragging as 24 million miles of space junk. All right, you can equate it to Halley's Comet. Halley's Comet comes around, although Halley's Comet is like a ball of ice, so that's like not a big thing, and it doesn't pass close, and it has no effect. Halley's Comet has about a 24 million mile tail of junk. It's amazing when these figures get outrageous. There's also another comet, the Hale-Bopp Comet, discovered a few years back. And it came around and went around the sun and back on out. That's like Halley's Comet, around the sun and goes back out again. The Hale-Bopp Comet was even larger and is It also had this millions of miles of junk behind it. But the point, like, also one reason I bring that up, when I first got into this and people were talking about this maybe a 3,000-year orbit, you know, and I thought, oh, get out of here. What are you talking about? Something that goes, you know, goes out to Never Never Land and comes back 3,000 years, like 1,800 years to come out and go back, you know, on two trips. I thought, wow, that's ridiculous.
Right.
But then come to find out the Hale-Bopp comet is a 4,200-year orbit. And they didn't even know about it up until, 10, 15 years ago. All right. So the point is, the length of the orbit is not ridiculous.
Interesting.
But here's what's going to happen. Number one, first off, the electromagnetic, the magnetics of this thing, besides the gravity, it's going to just wipe out all of our satellites, all of our electronic transmissions of all that stuff is going to be kaputs. All right? Then, as it will pass around, it'll come by and pass and actually cause an eclipse of the sun for a period of time. It will go behind the sun, trailing all this junk. We will pass through the tail of this thing one time, then it will go around and back out, and we will pass through it a second time. The calculations is it'll be 155 days between going through it, number one, and going through the tail, number two.
Mm-hmm.
During that period of time, which is about 1 hour, going, that's doing the calculation on the speeds of our the Earth going around the sun, and this unit at the width of the band that it'll be dragging behind it as junk and all the rest of that, we will go through it about 1 hour, two different times. In other words, first time we'll go through about an hour, and then the second time, which will be 155 days later, about 4 or 5 months, we will go through it a second time, and again, that'll be an hour. But during that period of time, we are going to be hit with what in the Bible described as brimstone, all right? It's going to be a meteor shower of junk, and it's going to be flaming, red-hot material, and it's going to cause fires like crazy. And the electronics may cause all of our power to go down. We may be blacked out during that period of time, or as a matter of fact, for a long period of time, depending on the destruction. And interestingly enough, the head of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, and also the former head of the CIA, Homeland Security, and the head of the Woolsey, head of the CIA, they both retired about 18 months ago, and they both made simultaneous almost forecasts where they said, we have to be aware of the likelihood of electromagnetic impulses causing our power to go completely out on the globe. They both made that statement. Now, they were implying that they may be from solar flares, but additionally, and they stayed completely away from the concept of Nibiru, but what I told everyone in the DVD, which, by the way, it's about, available about whatever, I guess it's a year at this point, about a year ago when I first put it out. What I put in there specifically was that what I said, and I did predictions, which I don't like doing that, but I did it relative to scientific reality, that I said our weather would change completely as of starting a year ago, and that it would never be the same again. You would see storms like we've never had, et cetera, because it will be starting to be the effects of this thing, even though it's not even visible yet. That it will be going through the solar system and like a bowling ball, knocking meteors and things of that sort, so we would have an increase in meteor and falling stars and shooting stars and all that. Both of those have exactly taken place as I've stated. Additionally, I told everyone in the DVD that the entire solar system has already started to be affected, starting out by Pluto and coming back inwards towards the sun. And what has happened now, it had already started a little bit, but what has happened as we speak today is that planets are literally being wiggled in their orbital configuration. The temperature and the surface gases are all changing and heating up on most of them. There are even brand new gas and surface activity taking place on all of the planets as we speak. Additionally, I said that it will be affecting the glacier and the melts of the glaciers, et cetera, which, by the way, now the Iceland and the South Pole is melting quicker than it ever has in 1,000 years. They are losing miles of ice a day. It's mind-boggling. They're not telling people about it too much. You can find it. If you look it up, you can find it on the computer. Their glacier melts, I predicted, are going to be increasing, and they have. Matter of fact, Miami, as of about maybe a year ago or 7 months ago, something like that, Miami spent millions of dollars to put pumps in because on the regular high tide now in Miami Beach, Florida, it comes in 5 blocks into the city every high tide, because of the increase in the water level coming from the melting glaciers.
What's the use of the underground bases in that? Is it just to protect the elite from going on up on the surface?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
You and I fighting
absolutely
over whatever?
Because what's going to, first off, what goes on, if all of it comes to fruition as it's anticipated to do, okay, and it comes around and it does the different things that it just physically will do, and it did it before about 3 times as good as it's been able to be researched. Like I say, it was Noah's flood. That was from this. There are other, like I say, multitude of scriptural backing on all of this stuff, not just Christian, but in all varieties of religious manuscripts, et cetera, et cetera. All right. As far as from the elite controlling people's point of view, all right, number one is they're going to get underground. Some of these places are inside of mountains, high elevated mountains, inside granite mountains. The old NORAD facility's been updated and converted to be one of the locations. They will have their entire cities, and by the way, I have pictures and even live footage of some of these underground facilities that nobody's ever put all this stuff together except myself in this large DVD presentation. They've also back, as far back in the 90s, you know, this has surfaced a few times, and most recently with the racial problems we've had, they've been supplying police and sheriff's departments with military crowd control weapons, the armored cars, machine guns, bazookas, grenade launchers. All of this stuff has been put into police and sheriffs across the United States. And the caveat was, there has been, that of course they, you know, gave them to them for cheap price or for free and all this and that. They just said that if, in fact, we ever have to use you to help us during a martial law control configuration, you've got to, that's what this equipment is for. So learn how to use it, we'll teach you how to use it, and we want to be able to depend on you if, in fact, we have social unrest necessary to be controlled. That's what all these things, for 20 years now almost, going back to the 90s, they've been supplying this stuff. And everybody's just saying, well, why does the sheriff's department in Titty Poo Poo, Oklahoma someplace, why does he need grenade launchers and all that stuff?
Yeah, audio cannons. Yeah. You know, Bob, I wanted to jump in. We're going to be against a break here in 1 minute. Okay. There's one other thing when you were talking about erratic weather, right? And the poles in Iceland or Greenland melting.
Right.
And then today, NASA releases a press release saying that in Antarctica, we're now freezing more ice than is melting.
But it's two different types of ice. They pulled that about 6 months ago too, where they were talking about.
I'm talking about the inconsistency in weather patterns. You know,
the reality is also when they talk about that, they're talking about one type of ice, whereas in reality, the glaciers are melting so profusely from underneath, actually. See, and what we have going on now, and I know we're coming up on a break, but what we have going on now is volcanoes. That's something I put in there. I said there will be more volcanoes erupting and coming back to life than you have ever seen in your lifetime, and that is a fact. Today, that is a fact. We have as many as 45 or 47 blowing their top as we speak,
right.
Believe it or not.
Yes.
The earthquakes increasing, the entire crust of the earth is being stressed from some unknown entities because they're refusing, obviously. They can't talk about this. It cannot talk about it until, at least until they're down underground, you know. And when they declare martial law, they will be doing it with a pre-recorded message because they're already going to be gone.
Exactly.
That's not telling that. You're laughing, and I appreciate that. But the reality is that's the reality.
Yeah, I'm laughing with you, not at you.
I got
Bob.
You. No, I got you.
This is Fade to Black. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Tonight, Bob Fletcher. When I come back, I'm going to ask him, does Oprah got a free ticket in? We'll be back right after this.
Hi, everybody. This is Rob Halford, the Metal God, on JimmyChurchRadio.com.
KGRA Radio. Intelligent talk.
Are you a paranormal investigator, ghost hunter, or UFO skywatcher? If so, FNGinnovations.com has the product you definitely need in your investigations kit or go bag. Introducing the Morpholite wide-beam tactical flashlights that put the light where you need it most. Traditional flashlights shine a focused round beam with limited line of sight in the dark. Morpholite tactical flashlights change all that, utilizing a revolutionary wide-beam design to enable you to see safety hazards such as hanging wires and steel, pipes, and holes in the floor you just can't see with a focused round beam. In the field, where safety is paramount, a 180-degree beam increases orientation and peripheral vision in the dark. Morpholite flashlights are ideal for investigations in abandoned...
Fade to Black, I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Tonight, Bob Fletcher is with us. We're talking about Nibiru, Planet X. Tomorrow night, Doug Taylor will be right here on Fade to Black. It'll be an all-Atlantis type of evening. Bob, I was right before the break, I had brought up, you know, sarcastically, you know, does Oprah know about an underground facility or people like, you know, do they have a ticket in the Golden Pass?
Well, I'll tell you what. If, now, when you, in terms of the powers, control upper echelon that I'm referring to, you know, that real limited few, they could care less about her. And her money is neither here nor there, period, end of story. However, if she's smart, she's already got a place because you can get an underground, commercially constructed home for yourself in one of the old silos that have been totally converted, and they're extraordinarily nice, and only cost you about $1 million prepay or something like that, for, you know, a family of four or five, and, with, food, guaranteed food for a given period of time, and, all the rest of that with exercise rooms and swimming pools and everything you can imagine in commercially available underground facilities. And there's a good handful of them. And you can find them yourself. If you got $1 million, and you want to go and take your family and secure an advance reservation, you can do it today and just have to look it up on the computer yourself. Look for underground survival facilities for sale, and you can find a whole bunch of them. And they're really, really pretty well done.
You and I, we can go in halves.
Oh, yeah, we can do it. If you get $1 million, you go ahead and get it and buy it and get your, you just buy it and you own it, and that's it. And when the poop hits the fan, you hope you can get there in time with your family.
Right, right. Well, we know about the ruling elite and that side of things, but what's the good news for the rest of us? What can we do?
There is no good news for the rest of us. How's that grab you? There really isn't. If you're on the coast, you're probably really in trouble because the entire coast would probably going in as far as 100 miles inland is going to be just washed over like Noah's floods. What they say, the scientists, like I say, have been studying this for so long and have it down to finite points in time and things of that sort. What they expect is that the gravitational movement will yank the oceans out of their seabed and throw them up, and then you have the potential of just any reasonable size meteor that smacks into the water any place, you're going to have a tsunami like we witnessed from the small under-the-water earthquake that took place a couple of years ago and killed 250,000 people in the Philippines or wherever that was where they had that problem.
Right now,
there is a volcano that's acting up off 400 miles off the coast of Oregon under the water. That's affecting the water. It's heating it. It's going to cause tropical storms being created where they were never created before because of the temperature of the water being raised up on a regular basis from underground volcanic activity. That's taking place as we speak. And they get talking, they do all this funny stuff. They say, well, there's this big, strange, hot glob of water that's changed the weather over here on the West Coast for a long time now, for a couple of months, and nobody seems to know. Well, whatever. They're just not looking in the right place. And the bottom line is it's a volcano that's changed the temperature. Underneath heating up of the glaciers is very creepy, and you can look all these things up. And again, it's none of this is going to be offered to you on the regular news. They're still dancing around. You know. The other day we had that hurricane that everybody saw down there in West Mexico, right?
Right.
They had the biggest, most violent potential hurricane in the history of weather. It started in one day. And in the second day, it was in a Category 5 with a small eye. It was not a real big eye, but in the eye, the maintained speed was 220 miles an hour. The fortunate thing was that it smacked right against the ground in Mexico between two towns and hit instantly a real high mountainous, it's like a short distance from the water to a mountain, and hit that mountain, and that pretty much wiped it out. But it still caused all kinds of, problems and rain and everything. All of the crazy, this, watch the weather. The weather on the globe is like it has never been before. It's freezing and snowing in places where it's never done that before. You'll have floods, the drought. Look at the drought situation. Droughts and floods and mudslides and earthquakes. Today there was a 6-point-something quake in, I don't even remember where it was. The quakes are happening like crazy. And there's a few people that have a handle on it, and they're saying that the total stress that's taking place on the globe, the crust of the earth, is way beyond what it's ever been before. And they have two or three earthquakes in a triangulation area, okay, a quake there, a quake there, and a quake there, and they come in and they're saying that there's going to be a volcano kicking up over here because of these three, and there's a few people that have bet down, and they're pretty good. They say, hey, 10 days there's going to be a this is going to happen or that's going to happen, doing these triangulations of stress on the crust, and they're right, see? And something is causing it, and basically it's Nibiru.
I have, this is from Renee, one of our producers here. She says, Bob, I ask you this due to the firestorm you created in the 1990s when you said scientists were able to control the weather. Were you dismayed by the lack of media coverage of the July peer-reviewed paper of Dr. Marvin Herndon that proved the reality and health and environmental hazards of chemtrail geoengineering?
Okay, well, I was the first person that made it public. What they were doing at that time, it was 1995, and I had this character that thought he was going to make a fool of me, you know, and because he said, you know, you told United Press International that we had control of the weather, you know, and his problem was that he just didn't know about it, you know.
Right.
And then I said, well, of course, no, we do, and I can prove it. And matter of fact, Senator Pell, Claiborne Pell, a few years earlier, had done an entire written story on the fact that we had used it in Vietnam in a small degree, and that we now had the electronic ability to create earthquakes, create hurricanes, tornadoes, expand them and move them and direct them. And it's electronically done. And, of course, now it's kind of like accepted that it's a common thing. Well, yes, you know, I didn't get any letters back from the Congress apologizing or telling me that, sorry, you were right, Mr. Fletcher, but, what was the second part of that? The last part that you said something about?
Yeah, the hazards of chemtrail geoengineering.
Yeah, well, the chemtrails, obviously, they're a real thing, but they're not being utilized as a weapon. We've had these people talk about, they said, oh, the guys, they fly over because I didn't turn in my income tax last year and they flew over and all my chickens died. You know, trust me, they're not doing that. It costs too much money to screw around that stuff to be killing your chickens. But then the chemtrails, part of those are, there are two things. Part of the chemtrails that you actually might see, and you know, et cetera, are part of the weather experiments, trying to create, you know, assisting or creating in clouds and that type of thing, dense humidity, and then becoming a storm cloud thing. Those are parts. One part of that is that. The other part is actually it's some of the newer jet type. Ion engines and some of the newer engines being utilized in some experimental craft. Now, I'm going to get into that craft stuff a little bit later. I'm not going to talk about it too much tonight at all, but there's I'm working on a new project that's just really upsetting, and it covers weapons and that are enough to make your hair completely fall out. It actually dwarfs Nibiru, and that's how bad it is. And then some of the aircraft and the advances that we have in that stuff, it's so far past your imagination. You will actually you think you're in a dream. It's way, way past anybody's imagination. I talk a little bit about it in the Nibiru thing, where I mention that we're stupid to think that they shoot these rocket ships up with these Roman candles and firecrackers,
right?
And that's our space program,
right?
Right?
Yes,
in other words, in you know, what do we do with our telephones now? You know, you do everything with your telephones except take them to bed. Right? Okay, so the telephones and all of electronic, everything is so far advanced, even for the little old lady from Pasadena, you know, but they're still trying to tell you that we're going up to the space platform every once in a while with this big firecracker, the same thing that we launched in the desert in 1949 as our initial experiment with the scientists brought over from the Nazi thing, that we're using that same firecracker that pushes a big metal thing up in. Boy, wait till you find out the rest of the story. Your hair will fall out.
Well, we'll save that for another show, and I can't wait to get you back on. I want to ask you this. What about the Anunnaki connection with Nibiru? Wouldn't they want to run some type of interference, or you know, come to the rescue, or ET to save
Why
our
would they
beautiful?
Do that?
Well, I'm asking you. See,
in other words, if you stop and think about it, and okay, now I give you my opinion. That's Dr. Sitchin's wrote 5-6 books on it, and I mentioned him in the DVD as well, because he's the guy that actually did do the transcription of the 2,000-year-old clay tablets that initially talked about what happened when Planet X came around. And that was part of my information, looking at that and analyzing it. And, of course, part of that was he talked about people being here on Earth at that time from another planet that was a neighboring planet, if you will, or one of the moons trailing around with Nibiru. And when Nibiru was coming in and coming back, which, you know, was one of those tremendous floods and quakes and situations back a couple thousand years ago, when it came by or was about to, they write in the clay tablets that these alien persons left. They just jumped on their craft and hit the bricks and went up into, you know. So they obviously had either no manner by which to control it or had no interest in controlling it, you know. And again, the clay tablets, if you believe any of it or you believe none of it. But if you believe any of it, the clay tablets basically say that there's a lower level of IQ, a man that was on the ground at that time, you know, was being utilized as a mining, you know, mining slaves, if you will, almost stupefied robots to just do mining on the behalf of these space people, the Anunnaki, and that when the Nibiru was on its way back through, the Anunnaki packed up their bags, got on their aircraft, and left. And that was the end of it, and that's all in these stories on the clay tablets. And by the way, there's still 2,200 of those tablets that have never been deciphered.
That's right.
And they're wrapped up in the museum, you know, and all that good stuff. But I got into his stuff only using it as one small, tiny spoke in the wheel in terms of my investigations. I guess the shocking or surprising part was to find out that it was documented so well in all these scriptures, you know, including on the walls of caves, if you will. Back in 1999, I think it was, there was a metal disc found in Germany. It's called the Star Disc or Sky Disc. And this is it was discovered at a site in Germany similar to the Stonehenge type of a location. And it apparently was an astronomical or a stargazer's location back 3,000 years ago. And in 1999, they uncovered a whole bunch of, our archaeological finds and materials and goods. Now, what this is a bronze disc, and by the way, I have all of this is also in the live pictures of it and all in the films of it in my DVD. The disc is about 13 inches across, and it is bronze, and it is gilded, highlighted in pure gold, laminated in pure gold, and it's like a drawing, if you will, that was done 3,500 years ago, describing and showing the passing of Nibiru and causing the sun to go dark for a couple of hours or whatever, and then passing on. And so now what's amazing is it has on the disc in this gold inlay, not only is it highlighting the sun and the moon at the same time and also showing Nibiru passing, but it also has the galaxies and constellations up around in the proper location, all right? And by taking our new computer programs, they took this, they ran these constellations in their locations where they are, and they are able to come up with not only the year and the month and the day that this was showing, but also down to the point that it was 8:30 in the morning. So that's how good the new computers are that can track back the constellation lake locations. And they took this, they ran on the computer, and they came back with the fact that it was about 3,600 years ago when it was done. And it was, again, found in Germany, shows the location of where it was and the passing of the Nibiru at 8:30 in the morning, and I don't have the date off the top of my head. It was like April 15th or something like that for our new calendar. Now, bearing in mind during this period of time, there's been several different calendars, and so, you know, you get nowadays it would be give or take probably a couple of months, okay, in terms of, you know, just differences in the calendars.
Right.
But the spooky thing is, it indicated it to be coming up on the 3,500-year point in the next 2 years. So the people that I've been dealing with, two, three different groups, actually, that have been studying it and following it and all the rest of that, they have a little bit of disagreements on different things, but basically all pretty much agree they anticipate Nibiru to be seen this December and the following March, 4 or 5 months later, for it to pass close by. Or if it does not appear this year in December and then January, February, March, then we probably have a full year again of a leeway. In other words, it might be the next year. Most people were betting on it to be this year, first seen December, and headed in for this next March. If it's not seen, or in my case, I put it this way, if they don't put us into martial law in the next couple of months, we're probably not going to have to worry about it. Now, in other words, for this year, then we probably have an entire year. Because apparently, according to all of the different information scripturally and all the rest of that that's been put together, it's always in the March, during Passover period of time. It was February, March, April, in that period of time, is when it apparently always had passed close to the earth. Now, part of the difference in arguments with some of the groups is whether it has come around every 350 to 360 years or 3,060 or 3,600. And it has to do with one group that I feel very strongly, actually both of them I have high respect for, but the point is one of them feels it's been here every 360 years and that they can show it geographically and geologically where there's been interruption in the growth of vegetation every 350 years going back, you know, and also the argument was that because of the figure zero, was not really utilized until a few hundred or years ago, or a couple thousand years ago. Then they started using the zero. And prior to that, when they drew out long numbers like 3,600 or 360, that one extra zero might be a mistake, maybe an error. Okay, so again, it gets, well, okay, if it's comes around every 360 years, that's come around 10 times in the last 3,000 years. And if it just comes around every 3,500 years, then it'll just come around at that point. But the bottom line is the anticipation is that it would be seen this December or next December. And that once it's seen, it'll take 3 or 4 months to pass, come in close, a couple months to go out again and be gone. But when it passes, it's the poop's going to hit the fan. And and also there is another argument. You know, everybody says, you know, where do I look to see it? And what we tend to forget is that everything is moving in the solar system, and they all have their own moves. Everything's rotating, and then everything's going around the sun on their own orbital configuration, et cetera, et cetera. And to say at what time for you to look out the window at what direction is like almost impossible. And if it's shielded by the sun, like the one that came into Russia, remember that meteor that came in and caused problems in Russia?
Yes.
A while back. Nobody saw that coming. Nobody saw that coming. And you think with all of the stuff we got up there, and the funny thing is they were anticipating one that did come in and just flew by that day, and they did know about that, but they never knew about this one that all of a sudden came from behind our vantage point of the sun. So it was being blocked by the sun, and they never saw it. You know, so the idea that, oh, they'll see that thing, not necessarily, I guess. And my last statement on this is many in the astronomy family that is following this say that it will be coming up from 30 degrees off below our plane of the ecliptic, which is the plane that on which most all of our planets in the system circle. In other words, give or take a few million miles up and down, they're all on a plane they call the plane of the ecliptic.
That's right.
And there's a big argument that this thing may be coming in from 30 degrees off, and that also makes it a whole different thing as to who's going to see it first on the globe, et cetera, et cetera. And if you put your arm out to the side, straight out, flat out from your shoulder, that would be the plane of the ecliptic that most of our planets are on. And if you go down about a foot, that would be about 30 degrees below, and that would be a whole different plane that it may be coming in on. So it's that extra little wet cloth that gets thrown into the whole thing.
Well, but, with the Nebra disk, the first time that I saw it, the one that was found in Germany, the first time that saw it, I looked at it and thought, and they came out with that dating, that 3,500-year-old dating right away. So they were able to date the disk. And, and I looked at it and I thought, how could it be possible? I mean, they certainly, you know, 3,000 years ago, there were all kinds of civilizations that were looking at the stars and mapping things. I get that. But this was pretty accurate. And this was different from all other depictions we had all seen of the solar system. And it was obviously a message. And it was done in a way to preserve.
And here's my feeling. Let me kind of answer that for you. How are we doing on time?
We got 30 seconds to our break, and then 30 seconds to the break, and then we'll pick up right
after. And we got one more half an hour, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right, very good. The disk, what I'm pretty sure, and by the way, I've decided after going over it and looking at it, the front of it and the back of it and all kinds of other stuff, this was was poured. This was during the Bronze Age, and they were making shields and things of that sort and knives by pouring bronze into molds.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure that this was poured. Now, what happened, I think, is when it took place, when this thing went by, and the stargazers back then, I think they probably drew it out, maybe in dirt on the ground, or even on the wall of a cave, if you will, or scratched it into parchment paper with a piece of charcoal. In other words, they sat down, they looked up, they saw it, and they said, oh my gosh, they marked all of the constellations, and they drew them appropriately, drew a circle, and showed it, et cetera, and even the edge of the riverbank where they were watching this from is indicated on the disc. And then sometimes later, it could even have been 30 days later, that they redid it and poured it and did this engraving and all in gold, because it would take some time to make it. It's not like a photograph that was instantly done.
Right.
But they had logged down in some manner, whatever it was, scratching in the ground, right on a piece of chalk on a slate or whatever they did, and then copied it later, and it would have been, like I say, it could have been 2 weeks later or a month later that they finally did it. But the locations, when they ran the computer that just goes backward in time, it says, here it is, this matches up, and it was April, whatever it was, and I'll try to look that up while we go on break.
Yeah,
let's give you the actual date.
Let's take that break right now. This is Fade to Black tonight. Bob Fletcher is with us. I do want to remind everybody, tomorrow night, Doug Taylor. It will be in Atlantis evening here on Fade to Black. When we come back, we'll follow up with Nibiru. And I want to know what Mr. Fletcher is doing up in Idaho for his family's safety. We'll discuss that when we come back. Stay with us. Back to Fade to Black. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Tonight, Bob Fletcher is with us. Fascinating discussion. Talking about Nibiru, Planet X, and its imminent return. Bob, I had said right before the break, what is it that you're doing to prepare for this?
Well, I'm an old guy, and getting older by the minute, I think. But I'm an old man, and myself, personally, I could care less. and I've had this fantastic life, and I'm not worried about it one way or another. If I make it through, fine. Of course, I live so my big problem, where I live, I'm like between St. Helens and the Washington, the huge volcanic activity over there, and then Yellowstone to the other side, so east and west. And by the way, if Yellowstone goes, it's all over anyhow, even if it's with or without Nibiru. And that thing's been acting up for a couple of years. So,
yes, it has.
I don't know. But I used to joke when somebody asked me about that previously, and I just said, well, I had taken yoga lessons so that I could bend over and kiss my own butt goodbye. And that's the best I can do. Where I'm, again, where I'm living is not the best place in the world, but it's beautiful, so I could care less. And I'm supposed to be retired, but I keep working and working and working. Retired doesn't sound... I'm 75, and I've had 2-3 attempts to kill me, and then since then, I've had a couple of heart attacks and one stroke and whatever. So
let me flip this over. Let's flip it over 180 degrees. Could Nibiru and the appearance of Nibiru be a way to institute a new world order and take control of the globe and use it as an immense fear porn propaganda false flag scenario?
Well, I guess the big my feeling is that they're going to do it and do the martial law and all that stuff before it happens anyhow. Now, if it and that's just so that they can get out of town, you know, without being interrupted. You know, basically, that's my feeling on it, and that they're going to want to get everything that they don't already have down underground. You know, they got all our money and every other thing. So, you know, this would be really catastrophic. You know, we're talking an unknown period of years before anything is anything again if something like this happens. You know, they're dead positive was probably just a single meteor 6 miles across that wiped out everything for 1,000 years when the dinosaurs were crawling around, you know, and they're pretty sure that just took one single really big rock, and that was the end of that for a long period of time. Small numbers of people survived and came out from under the ground and from their caves and regenerated Earth again, you know.
Of the things that I wanted to bring up when we talk about amateur astronomers and their ability to find things, we just had this asteroid, the closest flyby, this past Halloween. And we didn't find that until 2 weeks before it flew by on Halloween. We had no clue, and it was traveling at 78,000 miles per hour.
Right, and see that's the problem. It doesn't, and here's what you have to say though. When you say we didn't see it, who are you referring to? In other words, the people that are in control of the good telescopes, okay, the ones that are way the heck out there and also are infrared with the capability to see things, whether they have any light reflecting on them at all or not.
Right.
You know, and that's a big problem. This is considered to be an infrared item. And by the way, in just the last year, you know, they've discovered as many as 20 planets that they didn't even know were out there, you know, here, there, and everywhere. So, and a bulk of them are fall in the infrared category that just don't put off their own illumination, and therefore you just can't see them unless they happen to be passing near something else and reflecting off of some other body up there. So, And space is so extraordinarily dense and convoluted and so many, you know, somebody, like I said earlier, and somebody said, well, what direction do I look? You know, well, like, for what 7 minutes are you talking? You know, everything is moving all the time, you know. And the only reason you see something that's way up there and you see it on a regular basis like the moon, you know, the only reason is because of the movement is such that it's on a regular pan, there it is right there. And it's huge reflecting off of our sun.
Right.
And that's the only reason you see it. If there was no sun, you wouldn't see the moon. It'd be pitch black. End of story. You never see it. You know, it kind of gets into the movement and all that and the locations of things is spooky. But the point is that I was going to make when you said they didn't even see it coming. Those guys that have the eyes out there in the skies, up there with that big old giant fantastic unknown numbers of satellites with telescopes on them, we have no idea. We have no idea how good they're able to see things. And they are not telling you anything. The people at NASA keep everything quiet that they're supposed to keep quiet. They don't even, you know, the bottom line is you get what they tell you. I mean, they don't, the news people, they don't know anything. What do they know, for crying out loud? I've been interviewed by every major network on the globe, I guess, at one point in time for one thing or another. And it would scare you if you knew how stupid some of these people are. You know, so as far as the media concerned, they don't get anything, and the only thing they get is what's released, the above secret and the what they call galactic secret level It's mind-boggling. You know, there's 13 or 14 levels of secrecy above the president.
Sure, there has to be.
That's right. And logically, there has to be. And another thing, like with the senators and congressmen, it's only a few of them that have really top secret clearances. They don't know what's going on. I know for a period of time, and including up till through tonight, that I know more about things than almost every single congressman and senator in Washington when it comes to top secret operations, et cetera. Well, they don't know nothing, and so, you know, you're not going to get anything from them. Anybody say, oh, write my congressman.
Right,
he
right.
You know, he doesn't, you know, he, God bless him if he even knows that he's got a mailbox, you know. And in terms of those guys, see, if they're not totally cooperative with the highest level of one world, new world order, upper echelon, elite, if they're not cooperating with them, they are dead on the slopes of the ski resort with Sonny Bono.
Right.
They either, they kill them if they're a problem. If they have to kill them because they won't shut up, they do it. Otherwise, they spend so much money in the next election coming in that the guy never gets reelected. Ever, never. You know, so you're either, you know, you're either corrupted or you're one lucky son of a gun. Or they just move you. You know, they move, they take a good, sharp congressman or senator that really cares about the country and cares about his people and starts causing some trouble when he gets up there, starts asking too many questions about covert and secret operations, starts asking about why is it the moon is set up out there where we only see one side of it for the last 50 million years. Coincidental?
We only
see one side of the moon.
Well,
because it's exactly in the right location so that its rotation and our rotation for a million years is such that it spins around and it's always the same.
Well, and you said something extraordinary a minute ago when you said, you know, I know more about secret things than anybody in Congress. And that
right.
statement is profound because they had to come to you so you would testify to get information out of you. And that is the end of that's the end of that statement. You're absolutely.
I'll tell you what. Let me tell you a wonderful thing. I was supplying, during the Iran-Contra stuff and everything, as I said, I had my hands on paperwork that a few people had in the world, and I was one of them. And I went in and I sat down with the chief counsel for the House Foreign Affairs Committee, who had just wrapped up the Iran-Contra hearings. He was involved with it. And I sat down with him and I said, and I had come up from Atlanta, and I said, I got, or Orlando, wherever it was, at that time, and I said, I got some papers I want to show you. And he says, what is it? And I said, this is what came out of Ali Noor's safe. And he looked at me, you know, and he said, what? And I said, this is the stuff that came out of Ali Noor's safe, and also his personal notebook that was a little spiral pad that he put up in his vest pocket that he wrote notes on a daily basis. And I said, you guys had it, and I saw what you guys had, but yours was all just black ink. It was all redacted. Everything was blacked out with a marker. I said, you couldn't read anything but the date, the name of the guy that sent it, and the bottom line and a signature. Maybe. Sometimes you didn't have that.
Right.
I said, it's all blacked out. And you said, you'd have, the only words you could read it was, tomorrow, south, north side, coming. You know, I mean, what is that? So anyhow, I gave it to him, and I'm talking about an inch of papers. And he scanned. I said, the best stuff is on the top. I said, like where Ali North wrote on his personal notebook pad, supply aircraft to move 1,500 kilos of MASH.
Right. You told him, seriously, the best stuff is on the top.
You know? And yeah. Anyhow, and he went down, and he went over that, and he said, we have never seen this You're a toy maker. Where did you get this from? I said, well, I'm not a toy maker anymore. Right. I was a toy maker. The joke was I was Ollie North's toy company. You know, that and the word through the CIA was never approach a toy maker.
Bob, never
recruit.
Yeah, anybody that's dealing with fuzzy toys.
Right, recruit the toy makers. That was the thing in the halls of the Central Intelligence. Anyhow, he said, he almost fell off his chair. He said, oh my God, I don't even believe this, you know. And I said, now I'm leaving this with you.
Well,
what?
Yeah,
and I said, so what? And he said, well, you're right. You know, I can't do anything with it.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
See?
Hey, Bob,
and he was chief counsel of the House Foreign Affairs.
Before we wrap things up, I got a couple of questions I just need to get some quick answers on. Number one, the footage that you have on the DVD of the inside of the underground facilities, where did you get those Where did you get those videos?
Different places.
Fair enough.
Another question?
Fair enough. Have you ever had a UFO experience? Have you ever seen anything in the skies that you can't explain?
No, I had. Well, yes, I did. I got to correct myself. When I was 10, and my family saw a thing flying across the sky. This was in New Jersey, and we were surprised and watched it, didn't know what it was, just a light, you know, and went across. And the next day, Fort Monmouth, New Jersey, had, 150 calls on it, and that's that. But that's the experience, that's far as that's concerned. Now, what I know about it today, relative to those things, I'm going to try and put that together, and that's part of some of what I'm talking about that's, it's very, very spooky. We have stuff so far beyond what people think. You know, and it's funny because people say, I know they got stuff that can really do this and things can really go fast. Trust me, you have no idea what these people have had and for how long they've had it. And I've said this for years, all the time. I've said this for years. And when they start talking about something, let's say it's an airplane or a weapon or whatever in that category, or even maybe related to robots or maybe related to even germs and biologicals and things of that sort, and they say they're working on this and in 10 or 15 years it'll be flying, you know, or it'll be doing this or be doing that, they means they already have it. And it has been functioning probably for 10 years. They usually say 20 years up, it's going to be doing this or doing that. And when you hear that on any technological item, that actually means that they've already had it for 10 or 15 years, scooting around someplace or doing something.
Can't we use that technology to divert Nibiru and get it off of this trajectory?
Yes. And that's part of what I'm working on, and hopefully I can make that available pretty soon. The answer to that is yes.
I mean, I walk around.
But the question is, it has to go with it, and this is a very scary part of it, and that is, what else can it and has it been used for, and what has it and can it be used for?
Well, I walk around with flowers hanging out of my pockets, okay? I'd like to think positive. And I know that there's something going on. You know there's something going on. We all do. We're lied to every single day. But I just have the feeling that we're going to be able to do something about it. There's some intervention that there may be 103 underground bases built just in case, and I would understand why that would be done. I do. I get it. I do.
Sure. But, sure. I mean, they get the money, and they did it. And their thing is, if we have to have it, we've got it, and we will be the few that survive for some given period of time. And that's where they're rolling the dice, right?
Sure.
Okay.
So, yeah, and I hope that we use this super technology, whatever it may be, whether it's anti-grav or some
you're
kind
gonna
of...
You're going to be amazed. That you will be amazed when you find out.
And we use it to divert. And not only Nibiru, but any other incoming, mass that would threaten the planet.
And that's part of the concept, But the bad part is how, and I'm going to use it, it's terminology and it's a little bit false, a little in the corny category. It's the evil in these people that are in the driver's seat, and they are completely in control of everything. Humanity is no longer in control of any part of their lives. And those that think they still are, I feel very badly, because it's a shame, and it's a shame that I would say that with a completely straight face.
Sure.
We are no longer in control of any part of our lives. And the evil that exists is shocking. And I'm going to use another term. And I'm not disparaging anybody at all, but I'm not a Bible banger, okay? But I am telling you, it makes me ill that I now have a complete handle on the amount of evil that has permeated the leadership of the globe, not just America. It's heart-wrenching information. It's terrible.
What, looking back, I meant to ask you this early on, and we've got about 2-3 minutes left, but I just got to get your comment on this. Was Bill Cooper was right, wasn't he?
About what part? I don't like Bill Cooper.
Well, no.
I'm going to tell you that. I never liked Bill Cooper. He exaggerated things and he lied about something.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. But
that's a problem.
Yeah, but his warnings about what was going on globally, and
in general, and basically, and I had several speaking engagements where we shared stage.
Sure.
I was on the road a tremendous amount back in the '90s before I was blown out of bed at night in '96. And crippled for the rest of my life. But putting it back into the simple terms, it's the one world, new world order, global control of a handful of demonic personalities that they already own everything anyhow. What is it? 2% of the people of the world that own 98% of everything.
That's right.
Are real numbers, and that's a reality. But for some reason, they want it all. They wanted it 100%, and they want everybody to acknowledge that they are it. They own it, and they're running it. If you don't like it, you're gone.
Bob, I want to thank you for coming on. It was worth a couple of years, but thank you so much. And open invitation, and when you're ready to come back and you've got some
We're going to have a follow-up, and again, I never thought I was going to do that, but I had to do it, and I certainly will go back, and it was a pleasure. I had a good time, and anybody that really wants to know the potential of what's going on, get the DVD, and we'll get it to you right away.
Thank you so much, Bob. Sleep with one eye open, will you?
I used to do that. I don't do it anymore. Both eyes get tired.
Be safe up there and have a great, safe rest of your evening. Thank you so much.
Thank you. God bless.
Bob Fletcher, everybody, and worked on that for a couple of years. He finally joined us tonight. And the thing is, and I want the audience to understand, there's one thing about Bob that we need to just wrap our mind around. Okay, he lived through everything that he said he has lived through. Okay, everything actually happened. The toy company, Iran Contra, Ali Nor, all of the Senate hearings, the testimony 1,500 depositions went down. He didn't participate in 1,500 that were all around him. The dark stuff coming in and out of his life, all of that happened, and it thrust him into a world that he didn't believe existed. And when we look at our world, our government, and the mass media, and the way that it treats us, you know, we have a choice. We can either jump on the treadmill every single day, go to work, get blind, watch our sports teams, and watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians, and have blinders on. Go status quo your life, pay your interest on the mortgage of your house, and just move forward and feed your family. That's fine. Okay? But you are oblivious to what's going on out there. And that was the world that he was in, the music business, toy manufacturing. And the next thing you know, he steps into a parallel universe, one that you see in movies, one that you hear about. And certainly the James Bond, the whole comparison is exactly right. And he got swept up, and he was sucked into it. So when we listen to him speak, as fantastical and as out there and as crazy as it sounds, and it can be, you have to consider the source here. He has been to the edge, and he took a peek into the darkness. He's been to places that you and I have no clue about. He broke through the floor and went to another level that none of us have experienced. Not one of us. So think about that. Bob Fletcher is an amazing, amazing individual. 75 years old and doing it. And that is that. And that is Fade to Black. And that is exactly why we do this show. Man, that was amazing. Absolutely amazing. Thank you, Bob Fletcher. Thank you for all you do, man. There's no question in my mind. You've got your finger on the pulse, my brother. Thank you, Bob Fletcher. Fade to Black's executive producer is Rita Kamarian. Show is produced by Hilton J. Palm, Mark D. Kovar, LJ3, Renee, Mark Dunbar, and Jonas. Thank you, Dennis. Dennis, you are amazing. Bob is coming up too, huh? You guys been watching Bob lately? He's quick on the trigger. Announcers are Steve Hodder, Gene Vitello, and Mark D. Kovar. Fady by Dale. Webmaster is Drew the Geek. Music, Doug Aldrich. Intro, Space Boy, spaceboymusic.com. Fade to Black is produced by KJCR for the Game Changer Network. Syndication, KGRA, The Planet. Tomorrow night, right here, Douglas Taylor. Atlantis all night long. This broadcast is owned and copyrighted 2015 by Fade to Black and the Game Changer Network. It cannot be rebroadcast, downloaded, copied, or used anywhere in the known universe without written permission from Fade to Black or the Game Changer Network. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Follow us on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Everybody be safe. Go Beckley Tappy.